Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, I'm talking with Laura and Lewis from Frontiera. They'll explain more about Frontiera in a bit, but we'll be talking about the role of space data when it comes to financial institutions and how they are assessing the climate and biodiversity crisis. Hi there, guys.
Hello.
Hi, Alison. Hi. Thanks for having us on board.
No worries. So, as is tradition, and seems to be every single episode that I record, could we maybe start with you introducing yourself to the listeners and maybe saying a bit about Frontiera as well?
Sure. Well, Frontiera is an environmental geospatial consultancy, and we use GIS and satellite monitoring to analyze and evaluate nature and climate-related risks and opportunities. We have a specific focus and expertise on biodiversity and deforestation. Since 2020, we've been working with financial institutions and corporations to help them understand their nature and climate related risks and opportunities and ensuring that they can comply and disclose with the latest regulations and frameworks. The business was founded in response to an opportunity to integrate satellite data within the financial sector. So, I've got a background in satellite monitoring, and my co-founder has a background in sustainable finance. And she recognized that there was a significant gap in the market where satellite data offers immense potential for tracking environmental impacts and opportunities, but there weren't many financial institutions that had the capacity to effectively incorporate it into their processes and decision making. Across the business, we combine expertise in sustainable finance and investing with industry expertise of GIS mapping and satellite monitoring. Originally, we were focused on solely on nature, so assessing, managing, disclosing nature-related risks and opportunities, specifically in line or most commonly in line with the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures. Okay. And we've just launched a combined nature and climate platform. So now we offer climate-related risk analysis as well.
Oh, cool.
I'll give a bit of a background about myself first and then hand over to Laura. So I'm one of the co-founders, as I mentioned. My background is in GIS. I actually studied geomatic engineering at Melbourne University in Australia. The majority of my cohort, I think there were only about 10 of us, the majority of my cohort ended up following the career path of surveying. And I was one of the few to not pursue that. I wasn't too keen on hanging out in the cold and wet or the 45-degree temperatures back in Australia. I was quite happy to be in an office and pop out, you know, every now and again, as opposed to
very
being
sensible,
outside all of the time. I followed a career path through GIS analyst positions, working for agribusiness, government, a software as a service company, and a startup. And then founding Frontiera. I've always wanted to work in a field where I was working in the natural environment, just not always as a surveyor. And I was lucky enough to work on some interesting projects with the UK Space Agency in a previous job. They were monitoring deforestation in tropical countries all over the world. And this experience led to the recognition that I mentioned before from my co-founder, where the metrics that we were analysing and the insights that we were able to derive from satellite data could be provided to agribusiness and their financiers, which led us to then sustainable finance.
Got you. Okay. So, sorry, just before we move on to Laura. So is Frontiera, obviously it works with global clients and it works globally in terms of sites, but is it a UK company or is it an Australian company? Or?
No, despite my accent, it is a UK, it's a UK company. So UK registered company, and predominantly the clients we work with are based in Europe or more specifically the UK.
Okay, cool. I suddenly had this vision that I'd got you out of bed or something to do the podcast, and it was like,
no.
Laura, maybe you want to just introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, for sure. And also, despite my accent, I'm also part of the UK company. but I'm part of the consultant team at Frontiera. So hi, everyone. I'm Laura. I'm a senior nature and climate consultant. And I have an industry background in using geospatial data for forest monitoring and also for international forest due diligence projects. I studied physical geography, and that's really where my interest in the space sector and particularly the downstream space sector started. Was I used GIS and satellite data to monitor changes in the global blue carbon environment, which is a very much understudied environment. But I kept that theme of monitoring land use changes and ecosystem impacts throughout my postgraduate degrees and now also my professional career, which similarly to Lewis, started in the software as a service sector and has now moved over into a more consultancy-based role. And I've been lucky enough to also work with the UKSA and on some UK government-funded climate pact projects. And I think what Lewis has done in that kind of brief introduction to Frontiera is really highlight the niche that we fill, really bridging this gap between the financial services sector and the GIS industry, as there's often a bit of a disconnect between the two. And that's something that I found myself really, really enjoying working with and working with clients to understand and really sort of widening capacity for understanding, okay, what is downstream space and how can we really apply it in ways that is actionable for businesses. So yeah, now I'm here at Frontiera.
Hooray, another physical geographer. It's always good to meet someone else who's done physical geography as background.
I think we're a dying breed.
I know. It feels like it, definitely. So just out of interest, before we move on to some of the other topics that we've got planned for the podcast, does Frontiera sort of hire a broad spectrum of people from software engineers through to financial people? Or are you primarily sort of EO-related people and very much specializing in the climate and the EO side of things?
We're a relatively small team, but we do have a mix of of experience in sustainable finance, and typically those with who have worked in sustainable finance but have a background in environmental science. That's what my co-founder's background, and another one of our key consultants' background is quite similar to that. And then we also have myself, Laura, and another consultant who are very much EO GIS specialists. Gotcha. But then the lines get a bit crossed because we're in quite a small team and we work collaboratively quite often. So the consultants with a background in sustainable finance are, you know, becoming quite adept at GIS earth observation, and likewise, our side of the business is also upskilling quite significantly when it comes to knowledge and expertise relating to sustainable finance. So it's kind of, we have two sort of streams, but they do intersect quite a bit within the team.
Okay, cool. I was thinking that maybe first off you could explain to the listener what is meant by a financial institution, because I'm guessing it could be fairly broad. And also maybe you could talk a little bit about what the history is in terms of that finance sector being engaged with climate and nature and that sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. So a financial institution is basically any organization that manages money. Banks, insurers, or investors. They provide loans, take deposits, invest funds, and help move money around. So examples include banks like HSBC or Bank of Scotland. Investment firms include some of the better known ones such as BlackRock or Vanguard. Insurance companies, so your Allianz or your AXA, and then development banks like the World Bank. So all of those collectively are financial institutions.
Okay.
And the financial sector is relatively well progressed when it comes to understanding climate risks, thanks in large part to mandatory climate reporting that's been implemented in many countries worldwide. The TCFD, so the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, played a large part in this, whereby it was voluntarily initially, and then the guidelines were implemented as law in many jurisdictions afterwards. And what we're now seeing is a growing focus on nature within the financial sector. So the financial institutions are quite familiar with climate risks, climate hazards, and climate reporting. And now we're seeing a growing interest in nature. So I might hand over to Laura to explain a little bit further.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis has mentioned the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, but now there is the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures. Okay. A bit of a mouthful. So that's known as the TNFD. And so now financial institutions also need to look at their risks, opportunities, impacts, and dependencies on nature, not only climate. The difference here is this isn't a mandatory legislation. It's just kind of a framework. But the goal is that it will follow the same trajectory as climate and become mandatory in the future. So it's a really exciting time to be working within this space and to provide services like ours, as we are helping a lot of clients really get started on their nature journey. They haven't really thought about it before. And so they're only starting to kind of dip their toe in the water about what are my risks, what are my opportunities. And there's this really interesting opportunity to develop strategy and to develop products such as ours and platforms such as ours with geospatial capabilities to really propel that development. One of the largest barriers to entry within this space is financial institutions really have no oversight of their value chain, of where their operations are, what their kind of impacts are globally. And so we believe this is where geospatial data can play a really, really big role in terms of the precision, the detail, and the scalability that's required by the TNFD. We help to identify and manage material nature-related risks and opportunities, and we do that using geospatial data and different metrics and climate modeling. And it's inherently so, your impacts on the environment are so inherently based on your geography that it's vital you know where that is, and that's where geospatial data can play a massive role.
So first off, thank you very much for that. Secondly, lots of questions. But so are we talking about the impact of nature and climate on an asset, or the impact of the asset on climate and nature? Or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Materiality assessments are a large component of this of the TNFD. And yeah, we're looking at both aspects that you described there.
And does it relate to what we've seen a lot of in the news about biodiversity net gain for sort of developers and large infrastructure and that sort of thing? Or is it separate from that type of thing? Because this is like financial institutions making, I'm guessing, investments into an asset for some reason. But I guess that asset could also be nature, right?
Yeah, it is somewhat related, and certainly it's kind of, we're all talking about the same area of expertise and the same focus for, particularly when we're looking at, TNFD is explicitly focused on both risks and opportunities, and the opportunities do often revolve around the potential for biodiversity credits, which are still a bit nascent at the moment, but that is certainly something that financial institutions are quite interested in.
Okay, cool. Would you be able to walk us through an example of how satellite data translates into a sort of intelligence for a financial firm? What is it that the data pipeline might look like to go from space, space to the spreadsheet?
Sure, yeah. So the data pipeline might follow something like this. We have remotely sensed data. It might come from Landsat. It might come from Sentinel. Time series data. That satellite data is then processed into land use change data sets. And then we incorporate land use change data sets in our analysis of selection of sites within a portfolio or a value chain. For example, we might find deforestation occurring on one of those sites, or a fire scar from some sort of wildfire. That information is then fed back to the financial institution through an assessment, and they can then take this information to meet with stakeholders. So, for example, if deforestation is occurring within a one of their portfolios. They might be a signatory to a deforestation-free finance initiative, and that might be that might not comply with their own policies, and therefore action will need to be taken by the financial institution to say, hey, what's happening here? Why has this deforestation occurred? Is there perhaps it was a wildfire and it was not something that was kind of purposefully provoked, and therefore that's okay. But if it was potentially a farmer within a supply chain extending his crop into a protected area, or cutting down forest that he has on his property that is natural forest with habitat for wildlife, then that is potentially a problem for the financial institution. So that's what they can then take to their stakeholders. Just to elaborate a little bit further, a large part of our service revolves around going from data points, so, okay, deforestation has occurred or fire has occurred on the site, to informing decision making. So how can that data point, we don't want to just provide the data point and say, here you go. We want to provide context. We want to provide suggested actions and further information to kind of ensure that the information that we're providing can inform decision making within the financial institution.
Okay. And I guess the speed at which decisions need to be made depends on what it is that's being monitored. So it might be that something needs a rapid turnaround, and or it might be something else can have like an annual report. Is that the sort of situation you find?
Yeah, so you can have for clients that want what you might call real-time alerts. And obviously when we talk about real-time in this space, we're talking maybe 2 weeks, 10 days, a month, sure, something like that. But when that is required, then that's something we can provide in a timely fashion. More often than not, people are just after kind of annual updates. That's the most common frequency that we're looking at.
Okay.
Yeah, I suppose I can add a little bit as well about like what the benefits of that are for a financial institution.
Yeah, that'd be great. Cool.
Because I think Lewis hit the nail on the head there in terms of like the data needs to be able to be integrated with sort of existing systems within a financial institution. Otherwise, you don't really see the uptake that's needed for the actionable kind of results. I think we've identified three main activities that geospatial data in this area sort of supports. And the first one would be kind of a pre-acquisition and engagement due diligence piece. So before you invest in an asset or want, you can use geospatial data to, for example, determine alignment with investment criteria. And that could be regarding risk on nature and climate. There's also a piece around ongoing management and stewardship of an investment. So looking at potentially how you can improve your management practices on site, whether there's the need for ongoing risk mitigation. For example, say you have a coastal site and there's a large degree of coastal erosion or a high risk of coastal erosion, etc. What actions need to be taken? And also the identification of any value-creating opportunities that there might be. It's not always risk, as we've mentioned before. And then finally, kind of the big ticket item obviously is reporting and disclosure. As we mentioned before, the using geospatial data and platforms such as ours allow you to report in line with the nature and climate related frameworks and legislation, and also, as you mentioned, annual reporting, ESG reporting, and internal systems and practices that you need to kind of comply with alongside wider legislation.
Okay, cool. This is making me think of a project I did, it's probably pre-2020, so probably pre-Frontiera, but it was looking at the erosion of a beach in North Norfolk, and basically there were legacy gas assets, but also newer assets related to bringing electricity onshore from some of the wind farms that are off the North Norfolk coast. And what's really interesting is that when I was thinking about that project, I was literally just thinking of the technology of like, okay, can we create a map of here is the erosion sort of thing? Whereas you guys are taking it that extra step further and saying, well, okay, we know where the erosion is. We know what the rates are, hypothetically. But you know, it's about making decisions about those assets that are in danger rather than just going, hey, look, everyone, you're in danger. It's more about sort of what can happen next. So is that, like, do you work with the financial institutions that are your clients to take them beyond that step of sort of going, okay, we've highlighted these things. They might go off and make a decision internally, but then do you say, well, we can support you with whatever the decision is as well and that sort of thing? Maybe Lewis. Yeah,
typically, the way this works is our assessment, that which is undertaken in the platform, is like a red flag review, a high level look across a portfolio of thousands and thousands of sites or locations or farms, to then say, if you're looking at nature related risks, where should I focus first? Or if you're looking at climate related risks, rather than individually investigating every single one of our sites, where should I focus, or where should I put my resources into kind of climate risk mitigation? So then with those risks that are flagged, if there is a more in-depth study needed, that's when we can support them on kind of focusing in on a specific site and undertaking a more detailed assessment. And yeah, likewise, that we might come across, for example, an intersection with a protected area, and it might be completely legal, but flagging that as a nature-related risk, because perhaps if you have a processing plant that abuts a protected area, you have a risk of pollution. There's also if they're utilizing water, maybe it's a sugarcane plantation, they're utilizing water, then you're extracting water from the site, and that's also a risk for not only the protected area but the communities around it. So then to take those sorts of scenarios, what is the next step? We generally provide consultancy with suggestions on what should be done, what should be undertaken, how significant is this risk? If a more in-depth study is needed, then we can support them on that as well.
Cool. So it seems, again, sort of seeing various things online and in the news, that financial institutions are increasingly being held accountable for climate risks in their portfolios. How do you guys help them move beyond sort of traditional risk models? And what types of risks are these financial institutions most concerned about tracking, if that's not commercially sensitive stuff?
No, I can explain it at a high level. So our platform, the climate hazards that we're looking at within the platform, are all 35 climate hazards listed by the EU taxonomy. So it's very, very extensive. Don't quote me on this. As far as I'm aware, we might be the only service to offer insights on all 35 climate hazards. Potentially, but I'm not absolutely certain of that. I just haven't come across another yet. Much of the data is available across different climate scenarios and various time periods, and where projected data is not available, we have logic-based risk assessments derived from both satellite and GIS data to provide kind of a static risk assessment. So we are moving beyond the traditional risk models, which might only focus on some of the more typical hazards, such as flood risk, wildfire risk, tornado risk, water stress, heat stress. You kind of have a lot of the approaches to climate risk focus on a smaller subset, whereas we're looking at all of those listed in the EU taxonomy. So we can enable reporting in line with the EU taxonomy, and some of the hazards that we're looking at are also updated on the fly. I'll use that term again of real time, updated as new satellite data is being sent. So enabling on the fly monitoring and real time risk metrics, which are updated as the satellite data is kind of ingested.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I think just quickly, in terms of going beyond traditional models, Lewis touched on it brilliantly moments ago, in that risk isn't the only part of a climate assessment. We have to be looking at the opportunity piece, and we provide overall climate and nature vulnerability ratings across portfolios, and those are really to accompany kind of our knowledge about best practice site-by-site recommendations and in order to have a comprehensive assessment, you really have to do both pieces. One on it, they don't stand alone, essentially. So you need to have a really holistic approach to doing that. And I believe that kind of pushes us forward over traditional risk.
Okay, cool. So you've already mentioned supply chains a couple of times. And I guess this is sort of a major focus for quite a few large corporations and for the financial institutions that maybe back those. The fact that you've mentioned it, I'm guessing that supply chain transparency is something that you look at specifically as an organization. But how do you use satellite imagery and climate data to help assess some of the risks around that? And are there any sectors that are particularly important for this sort of work? I'm thinking possibly agriculture and mining.
Yeah, certainly agriculture and mining are probably the biggest focus.
I nailed it.
For this, for this sort of assessment. There's definitely an increase in regulatory initiatives within both the financial sector and the agricultural sector, or soft commodities, mining, etc. Regulations such as the European Union's deforestation regulation. We do a lot of work in that space. It's just come into effect, and that ensures soft commodities being traded within the EU or a certain suite of industries within the soft commodity sector that are being traded within the EU are proven to be deforestation free, legally harvested, and that requires the specific geolocation of the farms where they were produced. So using satellite imagery, we can identify land use change, identify deforestation, or assure the absence of deforestation or degradation.
Okay, yeah.
And ensure long-term business for sustainable producers, minimize impacts on smallholder farmers, and ensure that these suppliers can still access the EU market. I mentioned earlier deforestation-free finance initiatives. There's a lot of major financial institutions who have signed up to deforestation-free finance initiatives, and we've done some studies for financial institutions where we're looking at, we might be given a list of companies in a portfolio, and we can do an assessment to determine deforestation risk or deforestation exposure within that portfolio, where we perhaps identify some companies of interest, dive down a little bit to see what we can find. And yeah, they are generally agricultural mining companies, and yet determine if we can find any deforestation which may not align with their with the financial institution's deforestation free policy, and then they can then take that to meetings with the company and undertake stewardship activities and that sort of thing to kind of ensure that these occurrences of deforestation are hopefully eliminated.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Laura, do you have anything you want to add in on that?
Yeah, I suppose even out with agribusiness, it's important in different sectors to understand what might happen based on your nature and climate hazards, right? We're talking potential changes to yield, maybe supply chain disruption, or just mass impact on surrounding environments. So for example, if we take water stress or water quality, that impacts businesses all the way from textile manufacturing to aquaculture on the other end of the spectrum. So the range is truly, truly enormous. And even within the agricultural sector, we're looking at maybe climate sensitive yields with crops being impacted by temperature, precipitation, soil erosion. And those are all vital for businesses to understand. Just personally, I also think there's a huge shift recently in kind of the reputational risk that accompanies a lack of transparency and a lack of traceability within the supply chain. I know I'm looking for the RSPO logo on my palm oil products. And yeah, I think there's growing public scrutiny around forest-related finance and being sustainable within this sector.
Yeah, I've started recently buying bird-friendly coffee from the RSPB.
Oh, cool.
So just a shout out to them. But yeah, that again, I guess, is that sort of thing needs to be checked and needs to be verified that the coffee is growing in the conditions that they say it's being grown in and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. We've talked quite a lot about the process. Maybe we can talk a bit more about the platform that you've mentioned and also the data set. So are there any specific sort of existing data sets that you wish you could use for your work, but are maybe hard to access, or maybe you haven't had a project that would sort of require them yet? It sounds like you're using quite a lot of open data and quite a lot of climate data sets as well as EO data sets. Do you guys get provided with sort of on the ground geospatial data for specific sites as well? Or like, is there something that your clients are sort of crying out for, but that data set doesn't yet exist? I realize that's a whole load of questions.
That's right.
Feel free to answer them as best you can.
I guess the challenge that we're seeing at the moment is climate data, the resolution of climate data is quite low. In a good scenario, it might be 1 kilometer resolution, but more often than not, it's kind of 10 to 100 kilometers resolution. So there's assumptions that are being made. And when you're looking at insights at the site level, when you're looking at insights at the site level, but using data that might have a cell size of 100 by 100 kilometers, some detail can be lost. And that's where that more detailed assessment that I mentioned before can be worthwhile as a secondary step. That's why our platform is kind of operating as a red flag review, and then to guide a more detailed follow-up assessment where we might dive down very, very specifically and integrate site-level information, field data, etc. In terms of data availability and what we would like to use, accurate data relating to water use and availability is a bit of a gap in the market as well. There is information out there, water stress indicators that they're generally available at a basin level, but I would say, in my opinion, there's still a bit of a gap in the market. So I'm not sure if anyone's working on this sort of data, please reach out to us, because this, I think it's beginning to be explored, and I predict it'll be available in the near future if it's not already, but it's not something that we have ready access to right now, where we can analyze water use and water availability with accurate results at a farm or site level.
Cool. So in terms of Earth observation data, like I guess it doesn't make that much sense to go super fine resolution if you've got climate data that's much, much coarser. You've got to try and keep things relatively similar in terms of resolutions.
No, we actually do with the Earth observation data that we are using. We are using down to about 10 meter resolution.
All right, okay.
And then climate data, it's depending on what's available. And as I said, it can range from about 1 kilometer to about 100 kilometer resolution. But we do, with our Earth observation data, typically use down to 10 meters.
Yeah. And the platform that you've mentioned, is that a self-serve platform for clients to come and sort of, like you say, do this red flag review? Or is it guided by you? Or is it an internal-only platform?
It's guided by us. We also work with partner consultancies who use the platform to serve their own clients.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it is in, we don't have one at the moment, but if there was a scenario where a client had quite a high level of GIS expertise internally, they would be able to use it themselves as well.
Okay, cool. Just looking at time and conscious that we need to start wrapping up, but I've got a quick final question or series of questions, because I can never ask just one. What emerging applications of Earth observation data in finance excite you most? And are there new types of environmental insights or risk assessments that satellite technology and, I guess, climate modeling and associated technology is starting to make possible now? I'm thinking AI, obviously.
For the AI one, I'll have to pass over to Lewis in a little bit. But in terms of just what people are looking for and emerging in finance, blue carbon is 100% a passion project of mine, but we are increasingly seeing requests to analyze impacts in that kind of coastal or blue carbon environment. And there's been a huge recent uptake in blue carbon finance and interest in the blue economy. And I think that'll be due to the inclusion of these ecosystems, so wetlands, mangroves, seagrasses, within the voluntary carbon market. So now we're seeing an increase in investment within that region and an increasing need for monitoring to gain carbon credits, the benefits of carbon credits in that area. I think it also just quickly highlights the difference between the kind of depth and wealth of data we have for terrestrial ecosystems versus the ocean. And I know there are some organizations out there that are really starting to make a dent in providing geospatial data for the ocean and for these kind of coastal environments. But I think it's definitely an area that needs further development and some further investment. And
I was just going to say, it's great that people are now beginning to look at the oceans and sort of the coastlines in a bit more detail and try and do more work around that. I wish I could remember where I saw it, but I'm fairly sure I saw something online the other day that was saying that seagrass restoration is now one of the fastest growing areas in UK sort of finance stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's really important. Lewis, sorry, I cut into you.
No, not at all. Regarding the AI point and emerging applications of Earth observation and GIS in that space, something that we're looking at is the use of AI to obtain location data for sites. So a big problem that financial institutions have and kind of a limit to taking that first step for location-based assessments for climate and nature is they don't know where their assets are. And Laura mentioned this earlier. They don't have a good idea of where their assets are located physically. They don't generally have geospatial databases of their portfolio. Some do, but the majority don't. And obviously, there's a massive opportunity there in itself. But it can be very, very time-consuming. And if you could imagine a bank trying to map all of their locations by, I'm not sure, maybe sending out an email and requesting people to go and, you know, take a georeference photo on their phone or whatever it might be. For a lot of sites, there are planning permits and there's information available on the internet. So what we're looking at is scraping open source information, utilizing AI to help develop a GIS database of locations. And I kind of thought we were on the cusp of something brand new and never done before. And I think I saw a post on LinkedIn that the UK government has started doing this already. So we've been beaten to the punch, but maybe we have a slightly different application. So I think there's still room for us to kind of further that, the development of that solution that we're working on.
Oh, brilliant. So definitely watch this space. It's been brilliant talking to you both. Thank you very much. If our listeners want to know more, how can they get in touch with you or the Frontiera team?
You can contact us via our website or via our email. So info@frontiera.org or frontiera.org, FRONTIERRA. And I'll leave you some links to post in the show notes direct access to those.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Guys, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you and really fascinating hearing about this. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Thanks for the opportunity. It was great to chat.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.